The Tom Woods Show, episode 779.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, if last night's result made you soil your underwear, well, I got just the thing for you. Tommy John makes undershirts, underwear, and socks without bunching, pinching, or sagging. And they make you feel like a king. Take 20% off your first order at TommyJohn.com/Woods and use code Woods at checkout. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. Well, the impossible happened last night. At least in the view of many pollsters and commentators, Donald Trump was elected president. You all know that now. And as promised, Michael Malice is here to talk with me about what this all means and what we should think about it. We're going to have a great conversation. By now, I trust you know Michael. You've seen him on Fox News and Fox Business, regularly on Kennedy. He's a celebrity ghostwriter. His most recent book is Dear Reader, the unauthorized autobiography of Kim Jong-il. I'm going to be linking to that at tomwoods.com/779. Every cool person on earth has read or is reading that book. I urge you to check that book out. Right now, listen to what we have to say. I haven't planned anything out. I don't even know what I'm going to ask Michael. We're just going to talk like we're talking on the phone, except this time we're recording. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tom.
So Trump won, even though going into it, I read maybe 4 or 5 days ago that betting sites that were betting on the presidency were already paying out for people who bet on Clinton. So those people are complete idiots if that story was actually true. Going into
well, they're
this,
not complete idiots. I mean, it really seemed like it was done.
But, you know, when you're in this kind of world, you don't go with seemed like. Certainly if it's my money, I'm going to wait until every last vote is counted.
And sure. Oh, that's fair. Yeah, yes.
On the eve of this thing, it looked like she had it locked up and the polls, and people are saying, oh, the polls aren't accurate, but they were pretty accurate for Ron Paul, I thought. I don't think there was vote fraud there. I think they were pretty accurate.
Hey, Tom, maybe you shouldn't use the expression locked up in reference to Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, I know it. I know it. I know it. Well, all the same, I really did believe that this was a case where people might have been misleading the pollsters because they don't want to be socially ostracized. They don't want anybody to know they're voting for Trump. But it's amazing. I mean, it really is amazing that he won this. So what was your initial thought when it became quite clear that he was going to win this? Well, as a matter of fact, that reminds me, that response of yours reminds me, is this a little something like what you were doing all night, this right here? Is that kind of like what I would have heard at Michael Malice's house?
Stop, I couldn't stop laughing.
That's from the Hillary Clinton is Evil video, which I'm also linking to on the show notes page.
I had so many friends who were crying.
That's incredible.
Literally crying. What happened to my country? Immigrant. Oh my God. I couldn't fucking handle it. Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
I could not handle it. I'm sure you saw my tweets. I was going crazy all night. I woke up to like 500 notifications, which I'm sure you get on a regular basis, but was a little bit unusual for me. And what was it? Look, there are times like in 2000, you know, when the Democrats lost and they're like, all right, we lost. This isn't we lost. This is what the heck just happened. There is no sense of comprehension on the left. And by the left, I include conservatives.
Yeah, of course.
And it's completely mind-boggling to them. I want to make a little bit of a correction. Both Karl Rove and Ann Coulter said the last time we had a Republican president with the Republican Congress was 1928. No, that was the last time we had an incoming Republican president in Congress. George W. Bush, of course, had the House and the Senate in 2004 and 2005. But this is just so funny. Let me just say one thing. I think he's going to be a disaster. However, this is going to pull the Supreme Court way to the right. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is on suicide watch. Donna Brazile is on suicide watch. All these awful people have been repudiated by those who they regard, sometimes correctly, as their inferiors. And I think it was New York, or the New Yorker called this a week ago. They said this has been a repudiation of the press. And that, I think, is a very key issue here. This was the America's way to say screw you to the press and how they're portrayed and negotiated with.
Well, it's definitely a repudiation of the press, and they had it coming, given the way they conducted themselves. It's a repudiation of a whole lot of things: the academic establishment, the entertainment industry, the social justice warriors, the mainstream of the Republican Party, the entire Democratic Party, the neoconservatives, National Review, the Weekly Standard, Bill Kristol, Mitt Romney. It's unbelievable how many – I mean, who would you say – it's hard to choose who the biggest loser last night was other than Hillary.
Bernie. Bernie drank the Kool-Aid. He fell in line behind the nominee and has nothing to show for it besides a loss of his integrity, which he's had for decades. So that's a big one. Is Bernie Sanders is a big loser. A big loser, I think, is Paul Ryan. Sean Hannity, who's very close with Trump, was on Fox yesterday saying he doesn't think Ryan's going to be speaker. And if Ryan, because the whole point of Ryan being speaker, the deal was he went with the moderate, so-called moderate Republicans and the Tea Party people. He says, I'll agree to be speaker in his beneficence if only you like fall in line behind me and give me a chance, because he was the one guy who could unify the party. Now the party's unified and Ryan is superfluous. So that's going to be a big problem. Obama was a big loser last night. I mean, how do you look this guy in the face? You know, when you at the inauguration, it's absolutely crazy. So I think those are I think Ginsburg is also a major, major loser because she stuck her neck out, you know, for it was kind of unprecedented and coming out for – it wasn't unprecedented. In modern times, at least, unprecedented that she came out for Hillary, and then that's been repudiated. But what's really funny to me is you had all these magazines like some Harvard College Republican Club and Foreign Policy magazines. We've never endorsed anyone ever, but we have to do it. And they thought it's because Trump is the worst person ever, which is might be possible. But what it really meant is this was a repudiation of the anointed class and of the people who know better than you, who are going to tell you what to do. And Americans, for better or worse, don't like to be told what to do. And this has been an issue since the Whiskey Rebellion. And sometimes sometimes the Americans do need to be told what to do when they're doing stupid things. And sometimes they don't. So this has been a very, very, very funny election. And I don't know how the one good thing I can say about George W. Bush, which Trump has magnified, is Karl Rove's strategy for Bush was to get out the base. He implicitly went out there and said, we don't care what you think. We're not going to try to engage with you. We're just going to talk to our own people. And this made the press apoplectic. Trump did that times 1,000. And now they have no voice. And he joked about shooting them. So where do they go from here?
As I think about it, I'm still trying to compute that they threw everything there was to throw at him. It's unbelievable. I mean, they threw, you know, whatever. It was racism. And that just – people just don't care about that anymore. They're just sick of it. They've been told that they're racist for years and years and years. So it just goes right over people. It goes in one ear and out the other. Nobody cares anymore.
No, it doesn't. When people are genuinely racist, Americans don't like it. Like when George Allen, you know, used a kind of a quasi-racial slur in Virginia Senate race, it does bother people. Saying you don't want immigrants from a war-torn country and saying that's, you know, on its face proof that you're a racist, that's what people don't like.
Yeah, well, I don't mean they don't mind racism. I mean they don't get worked up when somebody who's obviously just a regular person is being bombarded with this accusation, because everybody knows what it's like to go through that. So they threw that at him. They did everything they possibly could. And then my personal favorite, every living U.S. president has repudiated him. Well, what better endorsement could you have for a populist candidate? How clueless are these people that they think that Jimmy Carter's lack of endorsement is going to matter to anyone?
It's the Democrats and the Bushes. He hates them all. Like, how is this a surprise?
Yeah. And how is this in any way undesirable? And they're all supporting, at least implicitly, Hillary. Okay, all the more reason not to support her. Just crazy. I can't get over that this happened. I had to watch it on Fox News because unlike Michael Malice, I don't always take that much pleasure in watching people squirm. It makes me uncomfortable.
You know, my biography was called, as you know, Ego and Hubris. And she, I'm telling you this as the day is long, she did not have a concession speech ready. They didn't even consider the possibility, which is why John Podesta came out to that crowd last night and said, go home. There are states that are still in play. Here's where I was shocked, because early on in the night, you know, Pennsylvania was still out, Michigan, Minnesota. All he needed at that point was Arizona and Alaska, and he'd be at 269, which would have been enough. Arizona, Romney won by 10 points. Arizona was not in play. Alaska, even more, forget about it. So between the two of them, he had won, and they're still acting like we're waiting for Pennsylvania, waiting for Michigan. No. It was done much earlier than people realize, and it was hilarious watching. But even on Fox, many of those never Trump people were like trying to be like, oh, yeah, this is a great thing. But they don't get it either.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And it was interesting to hear Sean Hannity on the phone.
Yeah.
He was clearly running victory laps around Charles Krauthammer and the rest of them.
Yes.
Very, very interesting thing. And then, yeah, I wound up being – I tried to just go to sleep. I was just going to go to sleep because I like to wake up early these days. And I thought, I'll get the rest of the news then. But I just couldn't help it. I had to – you know, I didn't want to have anything visual that would keep me awake, so I had the radio on, and
right.
I couldn't sleep. I have to know what's going to happen, even though you're right. Of course, I kind of know. On the other hand, there could be some shenanigans. I need to hear the official thing, and that's amazing. It's just amazing that he won. All right.
And here's what else is shocking. I honestly thought if he wins or if she wins, given their extreme unpopularity rating, they would have reverse coattails. That someone who holds their nose and votes for Hillary is going to vote for the Republican Senate candidate or vice versa, because they're like, all right, I have to vote for her, but I don't want her to have a Democratic Senate. You know what I mean? And that did not happen. The Republicans, I believe, only lost one Senate seat when they were slated to lose this four. And it was in, you know, Illinois against a woman who lost some limbs, you know, in service to our country. So that was a kind of a gimme. So they ran the table.
That was very much a surprise, because, of course, the claim was Trump is such an albatross. He's going to we're going to lose everything because of this guy. And to the contrary, they gained everything.
Yeah.
And so far, I haven't seen any thank you letters that have been published publicly by these people. It's very interesting. So I was posting on Twitter that I thought Bill Kristol was a big loser.
Oh, yeah.
With his Evan McMullen.
Yeah.
Who was supposed to at least hurt Trump in Utah. Trump absolutely crushed this guy in Utah. I mean, Trump, who is not exactly Mormon in his personal morality, absolutely crushed Evan McMullen like a bug. We could also – I mean, I don't really want to talk about the – unless you feel like we must – the Gary Johnson phenomenon?
Oh, yes, we do.
All right. Why don't we do that?
Did he get 5%?
There's no way he could have, right? I didn't see any state where he was over 2 or 3.
Well, let's just see.
I mean, maybe I missed it.
I'm going on Wikipedia right now.
Let's see who wins.
I don't think he did either. But another major, major, major loser has to be Bill Weld. I mean, this guy is completely reprehensible. He's not a libertarian in any sense, other than the Beltway sense of libertarian. He sold out his own ticket before the election was over. And now he worked with Hillary Clinton on the Watergate hearings, even though she was fired because she was regarded as so dishonest. This is in the 70s, and he still defended her. Good riddance to him. He's a horrible, horrible person. And he's another big loser last night. Evan Bayh is another big loser. That was a shock. He was a very moderate, very popular former senator from Indiana, decided to go back into office, and he lost. So I think he's another major, major loser last night.
Well, I'm looking over the numbers, and I do want to correct myself, because certainly in the states I was seeing, Johnson was at 2 or 3%. But there do seem to be a number of states where he had a stronger performance, where he approached or even exceeded 5% in North Dakota, 6.3, 5.5 in Montana. These are all safe states.
Statistically relevant. Yeah.
No,
I mean, you need 5% of the national vote, and North Dakota is going to be a rounding error.
Yeah. So I'm trying to find here where I can get the overall popular vote numbers, and I can't seem to find that. Probably should have done that before going on, but we're trying to churn this episode out, baby. We're trying to get it out to the people.
Oh my! And just watch. If you go to my Facebook wall, I have a photo of Trump smugly grinning. And I said, go to every one of your friends who said I voted and post that picture and watch their heads explode and tell them, see, this is your fault. You just didn't vote hard enough. I've only gotten 2 defriending so far. I'm kind of disappointed in the hoi polloi.
Yeah. Indeed. Now, of course, Hillary wins the popular vote. So
is that true? Yeah, I don't think that's true.
59.4 to 59.2. Looks to me. I'm looking at the results. Now, that's what the New York Times is reporting as of this moment.
But we're still not done counting.
Okay. So still not done counting. All right. So we'll see. But to me, since I'm an old Federalist, I couldn't care less about the popular vote. It's and maybe you and I have a disagreement on that. But
you think I disagree? You're talking to Mr. Hamilton. You're saying I disagree are you kidding me?
Oh, all right. Well, good. But I mean, I would imagine that you would think that. Well, I've gotten into a lot of trouble trying to imagine what you think. So go ahead. Tell me.
That's the stuff of nightmares. The whole point of the Electoral College is so the Morlocks don't control this country. So who cares what the popular vote is? It's the Electoral College that matters.
Yeah, and there are a lot of good reasons to have the Electoral College, regardless of what the outcome was here. So to heck with that. But all right. Oh, you were mentioning Bill Weld.
Yeah.
Now, I was talking to I can't say his person's name because I didn't ask permission for this, but let's say I was talking to a well-known libertarian who said, if we had said at the time that Weld got the vice presidential nomination for the Libertarian Party, if we had said at that time he's likely to go on television and say, I'm here to vouch for Hillary Clinton,
right,
and to say that Trump would be dangerous and terrible, but she would bring a smart, business-like approach to our affairs. And yeah, Gary Johnson, you know, he's a pretty good guy. Despite Aleppo, you know, he's all right. He's pretty good. People would have laughed at me. They said, oh, you extremist. You know, you're not going to be satisfied till Murray Rothbard's corpse is running for president on the LP ticket. But yet that actually did happen.
Right.
And
the party of principle.
And I'm waiting for David Bowes of the Cato Institute to say something about that. Maybe he did. I highly doubt it. When Bill Weld was nominated, all Bowes could do was post an image of back cover of one of his books showing an endorsement by Bill Weld. I mean, this talk about pathetic, right?
Well, let's give credit where credit is due. The one person who held Bill Weld's feet to the fire more than anyone is my girl Kennedy on her show. She had him on an interview. Her jaw was set in stone, and she eviscerated him. She called him out personally that he doesn't care about libertarianism and is just using this to further his political ambitions, that everyone feels betrayed. I'm sure I didn't ask her about this, but I'm sure she felt personally betrayed because she stuck her neck out on behalf of the Johnson ticket. So if you watch that interview, she's not ANCAP by any means. You know, she's a moderate libertarian, but she tore him a new one more than anyone else has done. And I'll give you that link you could put in the show notes page.
I will put that link in there. I did see
that.
Oh,
it's a thing of beauty.
Yeah. No, I agree. I thought it was interesting when he was commenting about his relationship with Gary Johnson that he said, yeah, you know, we talk like every other day and, you know, we try and stay in touch. And so I mean, you get the feeling that I couldn't care less about this guy. Gary Johnson, meanwhile, is like a deer in the headlights in this whole situation. You get the feeling. And we're told that Gary has helped to change Bill Weld's views on criminal justice reform. And I think I've tried managed to change some of Gary's views on constructive engagement with the world, which of course means bombing.
Right.
So there were libertarians in the world. And what's so funny to me, and I, people who listen regularly know I don't focus on libertarian infighting and drama and personalities. I really don't. So, I mean, look, I love that stuff because you're lying if you tell me you don't. You're lying. That stuff is fun to keep informed about. But I will say it is hilarious to me that people at the Cato Institute, like David Bowes, and all those in that whole circle, on the one hand, they portray themselves, and I'll even say it. You know what? I'll say it. Reason Magazine. They portray themselves as these avant-garde, you know, culturally hip sort of people, and they're radical. But when it comes time to endorse candidates, without fail, they pick the most sleep-inducing candidates of all, and it's this supposedly crotchety old right-wing libertarian, namely me, who always wants the radical candidate. Why is that?
Because you're out of touch.
My salary doesn't depend on having the correct views.
I have to defend Reason and Cato. okay? I'm going to do it. I was a Cato intern. I have a lot of friends at Reason. We don't know 100% the path to liberty. If this has to be an eight-pronged approach and they're the tool that gives respectability to libertarian ideas in a mainstream context, then they have to get credit for that. I know a lot of ANCAPs were Cato interns and learned things through Cato. So you can't completely throw the baby out with the bathwater. And let me also defend Gary Johnson. Whenever I meet him in the green room at Fox, he's a very cool guy.
I agree.
Hold on. Let me tell my joke. He walked into that green room and I said, look, it's the rich man's Austin Peterson. And he laughed and he was good natured about me being a jerk to him. So that counts for something in my book. And it's to be honest, Tom, I don't think it's worth a continental damn who you endorse or who Reason endorses. Let's be serious. I mean, this is who they think has a better strategy, but this is not, you know, people with the power of endorsement like, oh, I don't know, Lena Dunham.
Well, I get it. But no, my argument, well, first of all, I'm not implicating Michael Malice in my petty hatreds, of course, right? But I do like to get these
quietly than I am implicated.
Yeah, right. So I'm glad you had your, you know, I want you to have your say and I want you to say what you want to say. And look, I know some good people at Cato too. I won't mention their names. I don't want to ruin their careers, but it's.
And you can't hate on Radley Balco and you can't hate on Brian Doherty.
No, look, I like Brian Doherty. I've had Brian Doherty on the show. I mean, I like Gene Healy too. I hope that doesn't cause him problems.
I put Donald Trump's smug face on his Facebook wall last night.
Well, listen, the reason I bring this up is not that, you know, the Tom Woods endorsement amounts to a hill of beans, but I just find it interesting that you would think I'd be the one who would endorse the stuffed shirt. You know, and they wouldn't. They would, but it just never turns out that way. Like, I would never in a million years endorse a ticket that had Bill Weld on it. I would vastly prefer, like, anybody else the LP wanted to serve up, I would be on board with. All right, we got to get back to Trump here. And before we do that, let's thank our sponsor. Hey, everybody, if you like stories, here's a story you probably never expected to hear me tell. And at the end of it, you're going to say, man, I can't believe he got away with doing that. Well, the story is about Tom Patterson. This guy was a medical device salesman. He's confined to a suit as he travels from meeting to meeting, and he can't get through the day without his undershirts, his underwear, and his socks bunching, pinching, and sagging. So he finally decided, you know, to heck with it. I'm going to quit my job, and I'm going to solve this problem for men once and for all. And the result was the company Tommy John. Now look, folks, everybody wears things that they need to wear. And I tell you about things I wear and things I use. I use all those things by Tommy John. I use the undershirts, the underwear, and the socks. And I can tell you, these are the most comfortable of these that I have ever worn. And that's why I'm chipper every day, because everything is just right in my life. Okay? There, I said it. You think getting these three things right in your life isn't going to make a big difference? Ha, try it. The fit is just right, and I'm telling you, it makes me happier. So you take this challenge. Take 20% off your first order at TommyJohn.com/Woods and use coupon code Woods. See what I mean? You didn't think I could do that, but I did. TommyJohn.com/Woods and use coupon code Woods. All right, let's get back to Trump here. I'm going to have Lou Rockwell on next week for a kind of what should we watch out for with Trump now that he's been elected kind of episode. Like, okay, we had our fun watching him break every single rule there is, but now what's he going to try to do? You said earlier you think he's going to be a disaster. Why?
Yeah, I think he's going to be a complete disaster. I don't think he has strong principles. He's going to get some good Supreme Court justices in there, but I don't know what his... I mean, the models we have for people that were like Trump is not sui generis. There are people who were like Trump who have been elected. And the people I would say were Mike Bloomberg, mayor of New York, and Arnold Schwarzenegger as governor of California. They both came in as these wealthy, well-known outsiders who are going to get the job done, who aren't particularly ideological. And Schwarzenegger, by all accounts, was a complete calamity. Bloomberg had a mixed record because he continued a lot of Giuliani's good things, but then he kind of went nuts. But in neither case were these like strong, you know, pro-libertarian people. So I think, and the thing is, the press is going to be waiting to pounce on him. And I can't even imagine what gibberish that State of the Union is going to sound like. If you saw him and Hillary at their Al Smith dinner where they were roasting each other, he couldn't even deliver jokes that were written for him. So it's going to be very, very weird to watch. And I mean, I'm worried about what his cabinet's going to be like because he still has to pick from the establishment.
Yeah, exactly. And so you go to all this trouble, you repudiate all living U.S. presidents, and then you wind up with—
I mean, Chris Christie or Giuliani is going to be attorney general, right? I mean, is this really like Ancapistan? I don't think so.
Yeah, so the fact that he surrounds himself with those people. Now, I hear from time to time people say, well, he understands he's got to have some connection to the establishment. Okay, maybe you could make that case, but that seems like that's the only connection he has. He's only surrounded by establishment people.
Well, not really. Okay,
the Breitbart guy is definitely not establishment.
I know a lot of his people. They're not establishment. They're anti-establishment.
But I'm talking about the big names. Okay. Who of those people have I heard of?
I mean, that's the whole point. You haven't heard of them, but doesn't mean they're not influential and they're not the one. I mean, they have his ear. Do you know what I mean? You know, I work for The Observer, which is owned by his son-in-law. I hear things. You know, it's not like the Romney campaign where there's chits that are going to be given out to, you know, every, you know, Tom, Dick, and Harry who's ever held the Republican office. And I bet you he's going to pull some good Democrats in there too. Watch.
Good in what sense?
Good in that they are competent and are efficient and non-ideological, especially for stuff like ambassadorships.
Yeah, but
I mean, they could be very, very useful in that capacity. And I'm going to make one more prediction, which I think is just going to be great, which is I think he's going to pull the federal government's hand off the trigger when it comes to marijuana criminalization. That's going to be one of his first moves, and it's going to be a wonderful thing because, as we know, so many people are in jail because of nonviolent crimes, and for pot, it is absolutely crazy. So I think that's going to be one very – and the other thing is he had promised – by executive order, within the first 100 days, the Fed will be audited, which is the Ron Paul wet dream. So we'll see if that actually happens.
Yeah.
And he also promised to execute members of the press. So, I mean, fingers crossed.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of the things that he said off the cuff. I mean, I have these libertarians who are so dramatic who take everything literally, and they there's going to be firing squads and whatever.
It's helicopters.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
But the thing with the Fed, that's not an off the cuff. No one mentions the Federal Reserve off the cuff.
No, that's definitely not nerd issues. Of course. Yeah. And that was calculated. He's a smarter, even though he goes out of his way to say, I've never done this before. He's much smarter and much more skilled at this than he gives himself credit for. And even his failure to give himself credit is actually a smart move. So
yes.
Let's think about what he might do when it comes to Obamacare. I mean, he's really hitched his wagon to getting rid of Obamacare. And he's got a Republican House and Senate. If he can't get rid of Obamacare, what the heck is he worth?
Well, come on, Tom. In all seriousness, having a 51 Senate majority is hardly, you know, a mandate. That is a very, very slim margin. Obama could barely get it through with 60 votes. So it's going to be a lot harder than it looks. But they're going to find ways to chop at it pretty hard, I think, especially that individual mandate.
I mean, even we know from WikiLeaks, even Hillary doesn't even want to talk about it because she knows everybody's premiums are going up.
Yeah. And that's going to retroactively do very bad things to Obama's legacy because that was, I think, I would say that and bin Laden were his biggest achievements, I would say, over his last 8 years.
Yeah. So domestically, it was only Obamacare.
Yes.
That was it.
Yeah.
And now,
I can't think of anything else. Yeah.
And then even Bill Clinton gave that speech that they caught on YouTube where he went out and said to people, this is the craziest system in the world. You know, small business can't cope with it. It's off. I mean, it reminded me that, you know, 20 years ago, I didn't know how good I had it.
Right.
Under Bill Clinton. I had no idea how good I had it under Bill Clinton. Because I'm telling you, I mean, you're a little bit younger than I am. So, but you would remember perhaps the extent, the depth of the hatred that the right had for Bill Clinton was very, very severe. So that's why when people were saying, oh, they hate Obama because he's black, I thought, what are you, 3 years old? You don't remember how much they hated Bill Clinton? They hated this guy.
Yeah.
But if only they could have known what was coming. You know?
The one clever thing George Will ever said is Bill Clinton is not the worst president, but he's the worst person to have ever been president. And I remember in 96 – 96 and 2016 have a lot of parallels, because after all the Clinton corruption and impeachment was coming and all this other stuff, and Bob Dole lost, there were a lot of Christian conservatives who were like, we're lost in the desert now. Maybe we have to form our own alternate culture. They couldn't wrap their heads around how someone that corrupt could get reelected, in the same way that many on the left today don't understand how someone who is literally Hitler, as well as Mussolini and the Antichrist, could have been elected in an America which is also extremely racist at the same time. And somehow this is a surprise.
Tell me what you think happens with the conservative movement, in, not politically, but in terms of the intellectuals, the thinkers, the writers, all these people who have fancied themselves kingmakers. I mean, Bill Buckley went to the Reagan White House, but now, without the help of, with the active hostility of National Review and the conservative magazines, Trump gets elected. What happens to these people?
They will lick his boots like the bootlickers that they are. They only kowtow to power and they have no principles. So they will follow where the power is and they will fall in line and be like, oh, maybe I misjudged him, or like, or he ran this way, but he's governing this way, blah, 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 blah. Watch. They have nowhere else to go.
See, that was my thought, but I thought for some of them, they would lose too much credibility. Somebody like Bill Kristol.
No credibility.
But Bill Kristol is just way too far out there anti-Trump. Now.
Yeah, he's done.
He can't come back.
Right. But a lot of them, this is going to be their excuse. When he puts up some great Supreme Court justices, then they're going to be like, you know what? Maybe I was wrong about this guy. At least this is going to be his legacy.
All right. Very interesting. So what does this mean? Is this going to be a blip on the screen in American history? Or is this some kind of a turning point? Because there hasn't really been somebody quite like him.
It's neither. Okay, Tom, I think I've said this even on your show, that things are getting better all the time thanks to social media, that views that 40 years ago you would never hear now can be discussed openly, and they no longer have a monopoly on the conversation, and that's why they're freaking out so hard. And it's just going to become more and more of views that are not allowed in the index card of whatever your term is. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be glib. I forget the exact wording. But views that are heretical are going to be discussed openly, and there will be more free speech. And now they really don't know what to do about it. He's going to have control of the FEC and the FCC. Citizens United is going nowhere. You know, social media is just going to, like, things like Twitter and Facebook, where they put their fingers heavily on the scale for Hillary Clinton, they're going to have some soul searching to do. So it's going to be a very – and the thing is, corporations don't care, but corporations want to sell product. So when they see that a lot of people think this way, they're going to start adjusting their thinking accordingly, I think. Some of the smarter ones. That's how capitalism works. The stupider ones fall away and the smarter ones succeed.
So Trump's going to be a disaster. Is there any reason that a libertarian should – cheer this outcome, or is there any silver lining a libertarian can find in this outcome?
Are you kidding? It's a silver lining and a silver cloud. It's a complete repudiation of the elite class and of the progressive hegemony over our national thought. So it's wonderful in that way. But as you remember, I mean, if you go back to the show notes page where it says guest argues Hillary Clinton presidency would be good for liberty, I thought she'd be a great president because she'd be such a disaster and would backfire in a libertarian direction. So I think he won't govern in any way that we would like. But I think in terms of people getting the message that you're not as important as you think you are, and that your ideas don't matter and you're a piece of crap as a person, that message is going to get heard loud and clear and repeatedly. And it's a wonderful thing.
Well, and also, even though he's not a deep thinker by any means, and by the way, that was so funny the way they said that about him. And I said that about him, too. I continue to say that about him. But for goodness sake, we lived through 8 years of George W. Bush. And as I said in my email newsletter recently, yes, we all know George W. Bush was speaking five languages when he wasn't quoting John Milton, composing sonnets, or shedding new light on the is-ought problem. You know, but these people had no problem with that.
Hillary Clinton's a deep thinker. I mean, I don't think she's dumb. I think she knows policy inside
exactly.
and out.
Exactly. That's all
they know. I think of one great insight that she has had that's like, wow, that's a new approach to doing things.
But my point is that even though he may not be super well-read or anything, his instincts, as best as we can make out, are generally anti-globalist.
Yes.
He's not convinced that the globalist project has been a good one, and in some ways it hasn't been a good one. I mean, there are some aspects of globalization that are fine and no problem, but there are other things that aren't so good, and I don't think we've had a president who's been willing to say this is not so good since Calvin Coolidge, maybe.
And the other thing that's interesting is Wisconsin's the state that flipped, and Wisconsin was the home and the birthplace of progressive Republicanism with the LaFollette family, and it was also the home state of McCarthy. So that state has been a bellwether and a harbinger for over a century, and that's very interesting to say that I don't think this is a blip at all. I think a lot of Republican politicians, especially in the lower level, local level, do have views very similar to him, at least viscerally. And now he's validated them having their perspectives, and they don't have to smile and nod and say America should have open borders and anyone can come here for any reason they want and it's all going to work out fine.
All right, before we go, prediction. I'm going to ask you for a prediction, okay?
Okay.
2020.
Yeah.
What's happening in 2020 electorally? You want to make that prediction? Have you thought that far ahead?
I'm thinking through to the midterms, which are usually very bad for the president's party, where the Republicans should have a gimme year because they're like have like 9 Republican seats and like 27 Democrat seats. And I'm sure his unpopularity is going to be pretty high. So that's going to be very interesting to see. And it's interesting to see if Bader Ginsburg lasts out those 2 years.
All right. That's going to be a key thing. The whole Supreme Court thing is going to be a key thing. All right.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you run, but we're going to have more. We're going to have a lot to talk about over the next 4 years. We'll put it that way. An awful lot to talk about. And you're one of the people I would most want to discuss all this stuff with. So I'm really glad we got to do this. But so much more to come. So thanks, Michael. Let's go and get this episode out. And I appreciate your time.
Thank you, sir.
All right, everybody. Before I let you go, I have a listener who wrote a book at my suggestion. I said that somebody ought to write a book called The Leftist Lexicon. And it would be a little like a dictionary where you can actually understand what they mean by all these crazy words they use that normal people define in different ways. So it's called The Leftist's Lexicon, 101 Words and Phrases You Need to Know to Understand the Thought Police, Social Justice Warriors, and Other Intellectual Totalitarians of the American Left. Well, that is quite a mouthful, but I'm going to link to that at tomwoods.com/779. It's written by Jern Blanston. You'll see all that written there, but The Leftist's Lexicon. Well, it seems sort of appropriate for this episode for me to mention that. All right, a lot more stuff coming up on Friday. It is Veterans Day. So I am having Scott Horton on to give a foreign policy briefing to the incoming president. And that way, one hopes we can prevent the creation of members of what we might call veterans of future wars. So we'll hope we can accomplish that with Scott Horton. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time. We'll